All right, in case you don't remember, we're studying Proverbs. It's been a little while, a couple of classes, maybe three classes, maybe more for some of you. But just as a way of reminder, we've talked about what is wisdom, the value of wisdom, what does wisdom protect us from, what does wisdom obligate us if we have this, what are we expected to do with this? And now what we're looking at is actually some specific dangers that wisdom is protecting us and keeping us safe from. So we talked about last time, chapter 5, we got into the first part of it. We talked about the danger of the immoral woman. And we're going to pick up right where we left off here in verses 11 through 14. And he talks about the destruction that comes to this person. And it says, and you mourn at last. So notice this is kind of a terminal condition. This is here at the very end, right before the guy goes over the cliff. All right. So when your flesh and your body are consumed and you say, how I've hated instruction, and my heart despised correction. I have not obeyed the voice of my teachers, nor inclined my ear to those who instructed me. I was on the verge of total ruin in the midst of the assembly and congregation. All right, so that picture may be reminiscent of some New Testament characters. So what New Testament character came to himself or came to his senses, depending on the translation, as is described here in verses 11 through 14? So we've got this person who has made terrible choices, their life is wrecked, and they're in ruined shambles. And right before they come to the very end, they recognize what brought them to this point. All right? Who did this in the New Testament?
Judas.
All right, how so?
After Jesus was crucified, he came back to the priests and told them that he shouldn't have given that he wanted to give them the money back.
Yeah. And was there any going back at that point?
No.
Now, he didn't have to end his life the way he did. I mean, Peter also betrayed Jesus. Not in the same way, but Peter was able to come back. And we've talked about other people who've done, I don't know if I say worse things, but they've done terrible things. Manasseh, Saul, and they were able to come back. So Judas could have come back if he wanted to. All right, who else?
One man that comes to mind is the rich man, described in Luke 16.
Okay.
That he lived his life not worrying about anyone else, just selfishly.
All right.
And the end of his life comes, and he realizes there's no turning back and that he has lived an unfruitful life.
Yeah. Now, when he recognizes it, where is he at that point?
In eternal suffering.
Yeah, it is too late. He's on the other side, and we're hearing his regrets. We're hearing his remorse from the other side. But his eternal fate has already been chosen. So those are all good examples. One that I had in mind was the prodigal son. Where was he when he came to himself? He was in the pig pen, right? He had literally lost everything. He had spent all of his inheritance, all of his wealth, and nobody would help him. And it was only then that he figured it out. One that I thought was from the Old Testament, Samson. So that's somebody who also kind of figured out the terrible consequences of his decisions, but his eyes had been plucked out. And he had been forced to serve as a slave, like really as an animal, just grinding at a millstone with nothing left in life. So again, examples of people whose bodies were completely ruined. Their lives were over. And this is the path that this takes you down. So what hope is left for these people? Once they get to this state, what's left? Maybe they can turn their life around and be forgiven and make it to heaven. But this life, it's over. They've ruined it. They've wrecked it. There's nothing they're going to be able to reclaim at this point. So, two big lessons. Don't get into this position so that your life becomes a total ruin. And then the other thing is even if you do find yourself in this point, like Judas, don't give up. All right? Still at least salvage your spiritual life, even though your physical life may be ruined. So, don't put yourself in that position. All right, question number 5. What alternative is provided man so he is not so easily seduced by the immoral woman? All right, so we talked about the dangers of the immoral woman and the alternative here. So we have the danger that she represents. The other side of this is, well, this is not your only option. All right, so he says, drink water from your own cistern and running water from your own well. Should your fountains be dispersed abroad, streams of water in the streets? Let them be only your own and not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice with the wife of your youth and always be enraptured with her love. All right, notice these two words being enraptured set in contrast to each other. And always be enraptured with her love, that's the wife of your youth. For why should you, my son, be enraptured by an immoral woman and be embraced in the arms of a seductress? All right, so what is the alternative? Marriage. There is a relationship. There is a place for this desire, for this function that God has given to all of us. It's in marriage. That's where it's supposed to be. So if we don't hold out, we don't wait for that, then this is going to end up being something where we're not going to be able to enjoy that blessing, and it's going to be a cause of destruction like we just looked at in the previous guy. But even in Hebrews 13, 4 to 5, he says, marriage is honorable among all, and the bed undefiled, but fornicators and adulterers, God will judge. All right, so if we go down this other path, this is going to bring us into judgment and prevent us from enjoying those blessings. We're going to suffer punishment consequences instead. Let your conduct be without covetousness. Be content with such things you have. And doesn't that seem strange? We would go from sexual immorality to covetousness. I mean, what does accumulating wealth and riches and houses and lands have to do with sexual purity? Does it? There's multiple forms of covetousness. So one of the things that we're going to see over and over again as we go back to this topic is Solomon is going to deal with different questions, different issues, because on the surface, we know the point. Sexual immorality is bad. Wait for marriage. Abstinence is the way to go. But, and it's those buts that Solomon keeps answering. So he keeps coming back to this because we keep finding ways to work around the instruction. We keep finding excuses to justify our behavior. So let this picture impress upon you this idea of dirty water running through the streets. I don't know if you've ever seen like a city where there's just water running through the gutter, literally running through the street. That's the picture of what happens to you if you go down that path. All right. That's the way other people see you and think about you. So it's not, you don't want to become that. You don't want to become the dirty common water that is available to everyone. You want to be something that's clean and that's pure and that's left reserved. So, other thing to keep in mind, notice this is something that goes on with the wife of your youth. Obviously, this is talking to somebody that is even older, and so this is something that's supposed to continue through their life. So, the arguments and the question he keeps coming back to is, why would you want to do this? This brings destruction on you. You have something that you have access to. Be content with that. I heard John Gibson say that ultimately for people that participate in affairs and adultery and those things, that the primary motivation is pride. And that took me a long time to kind of get my head wrapped around it, but I think he's right. There is obviously a desire that's part of that. But if somebody has access to a way to fulfill that desire, then why go somewhere else? It's because they moved into a mindset where they're kind of accumulating like notches on their helmet. And said, oh, I've got this many, 5, 10, 15. So whether it's the male idea of conquest or the girl's idea of seduction or casting someone down like we've talked about, it becomes a pride issue. And so be careful. Make sure you're watching out for that and learn to be content. All right. So can a person ever hope to outsmart God and avoid the consequences of this sin with an immoral woman? Why not? Obviously, the answer is no. Whitty?
Kind of as he had mentioned earlier in the chapter when he talks about in verse 6, her ways are unstable and you do not know them. He says that you don't know how to outsmart her.
Okay. All right. So against her, you're outmatched. So, and that is an excellent point. How about against God? Can you avoid the consequences of this as far as God is concerned? Well, if you can't outsmart her, you're sure not going to be able to outsmart God, okay? So look at what he says here near the end of chapter 5, verses 21 to 23. For the ways of man are before the eyes of the Lord. He's watching. And he ponders all his paths. His own iniquities entrap the wicked man, and he is caught in the cords of his sin. He shall die for lack of instruction, and in the greatness of his folly he shall go astray. All right, that's a rich passage, but the first thing I want you to think about, remember how we started the beginning of chapter 5? We really ended chapter 4. What was the instruction? To ponder the path of your feet. Let your eyes look straight ahead. There's that message of contentment again. Don't turn to the right. Don't turn to the left. Stay focused on what's on your path, what belongs to you. All right? So here's the other half of this. You need to be pondering it because guess who's looking over your shoulder? God. And he's looking over your shoulder to what extent? He's making sure that justice will be done. So if we think we're going to get by with this, our own iniquities will entrap us. We'll be caught in the cords of our sin. You ever seen in one of those movies where the villain is like trying to set up a trap to get somebody, maybe actually using ropes and chains or whatever, and something goes horribly wrong at the very end, and all of a sudden, justice works out. The villain literally gets caught in his own chains and his own cords, and he can't get out. and he chokes or hangs and he dies there. That's the picture here of somebody who set up this grand scheme, this grand plan, and they're going to get by with it. And somehow their plan actually backfires on them and they actually end up being destroyed by their own plans. All right, so notice the ignorance playing a part. This is a lack of instruction. Did he not receive instruction or did he not accept the instruction? All right, and in the greatness of his folly. So this is not something that somebody just kind of accidentally slips into. There is a persistence in this. All right, so nothing is hidden from God. We talked about this at the end of chapter 4, 23, 27. Hebrews 4, 12 through 13, talking about God's word and how it reflects on us. It says, for the word of God is living and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even to the division of soul and spirit and of joints and marrow. So the places where we can't even see a distinction, it's able to drive right through them. And it's a discerner of the thoughts and intents of the heart. All right, so God's word. No, we're not talking about God. We're talking about God's word. God's word reveals what's going on in here. But he goes on to say that there is no creature hidden from his sight. Okay, now we're talking about God. But all things are naked and open to the eyes of him to whom we must give an account. And that's the picture here that we're seeing here in Proverbs. We're going to stand before him. And what are we able to hide from him? Nothing. He sees through everything. Now, there's two reactions to that, right? The obvious reaction is that's terrifying. And so that is a message of warning. Make sure that we're in a condition that when he looks at us, that it's okay. And in fact, that's really where we want to be. We actually want to be in a spot where this is actually encouraging. How in the world could that be encouraging? How could that be a thought, a joyful thought? Well, then you end up being like David, where he says to God, test me, try me, look in my heart, see if there's anything false and examine me. Why? So that can be removed. So knowing that we have someone who's looking over us to take care of us, as long as we are willing to submit to whatever he says, and we're willing to make the sacrifices so that we can be pleasing to him, well, then that's encouraging to know that nothing's getting by. He's going to clean us, purify us, take care of every last thing, if we're willing to do that. That's the big question. That's what we got to work towards. All right. So can't possibly hope to outsmart and mock him. We've looked at this before, Galatians 6, 7. Don't be deceived. There's the big warning sign again. It's like God's reaching through the pages of the book, tapping you on your head. Hey, talking to you. If you think it's not, this doesn't apply to you, you are the one I'm talking to. God is not mocked. So that's what we're doing whenever we think we're going to get by with something. Whatever we sow, that we'll reap. Galatians 6, 7. The other thing is he's active in this world and he's designed the world to expose our sins. We looked at this before in Numbers 32, 23. You have sinned against the Lord, and be sure, be confident, your sin will find you out. All right, so we're not going to get by with stuff. It's going to come out sooner or later. Think about David. David's sin with Bathsheba. Where did that end up? He started off trying to keep it private. Did it stay private? No. No. In fact, his son humiliated him by bringing all of his wives and all of his concubines onto the roof. And he did with all of David's wives what David did with one person in private. He did it in front of everybody, where everybody knew exactly what was, humiliated him before everybody. And it was his own son that did this to him, not to mention the other sons he lost along the way. So God made that point specifically to David. What you did privately, I will do to you publicly. All right. And of course, not to mention, we will stand before him on judgment day. So this is not something we can possibly hope to do. We can't possibly hope to dabble in this and expect to get by with it. All right, any questions about this before we move on to the next danger that wisdom helps us to avoid? All right, we're going to come back to the moral woman and the problems with sexual immorality again. And the very fact that it spends so much time on it, I think that's a huge exclamation mark. That is the big danger. That is the biggest trap that you face in these upcoming years. So make sure that you're prepared for that. All right, the next thing we're going to talk about is financial danger. This is another thing that wisdom protects us from if we listen to it. My son, if you become surety for your friend, if you have shaken your hands in pledge for a stranger, you are snared by the words of your mouth. You are taken by the words of your mouth. So do this, my son, and deliver yourself, for you have come into the hand of your friend. Go and humble yourself. Plead with your friend. Give no sleep to your eyes nor slumber to your eyelids. Deliver yourself like a gazelle from the hand of the hunter, and like a bird from the hand of the fowler. All right. When was the last time one of you used the word surety? Ever. Isaac's used it before, but it's not a word that we use on a common basis. What does it mean to be surety for your friend? Anybody translate this into modern English for us? Maybe?
I took that to mean kind of like a fallback for your friend, the guy he goes to whenever something's wrong.
Okay, all right. That is a distinct possibility. Now, in that case, you can still kind of get out of it, right? Each time he comes to you, you have the option of saying no. This is something where you're trapped. There is no. There's no getting it. You better act, and you better act fast to get yourself out of the situation because it's about to be irreversible, all right? So the thing that he's talking about is something that probably most of you all have not had to deal with before. If you've bought a car, okay, so I've already talked about a very different group, right? Maybe you actually said, I'm going to make payments. I have a job, and I'm going to pay for part of the car. At this age, and probably over the next couple of years, no bank would give you a loan. Your parents are going to have to, what they say, co-sign the loan. They're going to have to sign the loan too. And what that means is, if something goes wrong, basically the bank's saying, we don't trust you. We know you have good intentions, but there's no way in the world that you can pay this loan back, and we're not going to give you the money. However, we do trust your parents. They make enough money, and they're in a position where we trust them. If they'll say that they'll make sure that the payments are made, then we'll do the loan. And that's really what co-signing means. It says, I'll make sure that it gets taken care of. I'll make sure that it's paid for. So if you decide that you're going to stop making payments, guess what happens? Your parents have to make payments in that case. Now, in this case, if somebody's surety, dear friend, I'm trying to go buy 2 head of oxen. I don't have the money for it. Will you be surety for me? Will you pay for these oxen? Will you co-sign for me? Okay. So the friend says he takes out a loan to pay for the oxen or the land or whatever, and then he skips town. He's a lazy bum, whatever. You're the one stuck making the payments. All right. That's the idea that's here. All right. So you agree to pay for it if the other person defaults, which means they give it up. They stop paying. All right, so why would somebody ever do this? I mean, how do you feel when somebody says, hey, I need, I mean, you start cringing automatically. I mean, you know that feeling of, oh, I'm going to look bad if I don't say yes. That we want to help other people. We don't like saying no. We feel embarrassed when we don't help other people. And so sometimes we get pressured into helping people when we really don't want to. And that's the idea. If you've been pressured into this, then get out of this. All right, so you need to go back to the other person, humble them, say, look, it was a mistake. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done that. How does that make you feel? Does it make you feel good? No, it's humiliating. That's the reason why he says go and humble yourself before your friend. Get them to repay, and if they don't, then realize that you may be in a position where you'll have to pay it all. So why is this important? Can you imagine living your life, bills coming in, you're paying the bills, you don't get any relief from it. As soon as the money comes in, it goes out. You don't get to eat the nice food you want. You don't get to drive the nice car that you want. But your buddy, he's driving a nice car. And that's where your money's going, is to pay for his car. What would that do to you month in, month out, year after year, until his loan is paid for? That would drive you mad. And in fact, that's exactly what Ecclesiastes 7:7 says, is this kind of oppression can drive even a wise person mad. All right, so you want to avoid this very dangerous situation. All right, any questions about this before we leave it? All right, we will reference this again, but this is not something that shows up an awful lot. We're going to see more about work ethic just in general. All right, so name at least 2 ways the ant can be a role model for industriousness. It's a big word that just means good work ethic. Hard work.
Their incessant servitude, and also looking ahead, preparing for the future.
All right. So diligence, as well as not having like their eyes limited to right in front of them. They're preparing. They're using wisdom. They're looking at the end, and they're preparing for that now. Anything else? Whitney.
Wait, they take initiative.
Yes, initiative. All right. So those are the big things. There's probably some other lessons we can learn, but let's go ahead and move on. He says, go to the ant, you sluggard, consider her ways and be wise, which having no captain, overseer, or ruler, so there's nobody standing over the ant, cracking the whip. Have you got this done yet? Are you done? I'm waiting on you. There's no parent. There's no boss. There's nobody saying, have you got it done yet? They're showing initiative. On their own, they're doing this. And what are they doing? They're providing supplies for themselves in the summer, and they gather food in the harvest. So I'm sure you all probably remember the Aesop's fable about the grasshopper and the ant. I think Disney even made a cartoon about it. But, I mean, this is the picture here. There they actually put in kind of a villain, if you will. But The two big lessons are initiative, be self-motivated, look ahead, prepare like the ant does, and be proactive. Don't wait for somebody else to tell you. Make sure that you're making your preparations before the need actually comes. Because like the grasshopper, when the winter comes, if you haven't laid up, what will you have? Nothing. You will freeze and you will starve, and that will be the end of you. So make sure that you're being prepared. Now, how about you? Are you in the winter time of your life, or are you in the spring and the summertime of your life? You're in the springtime. You do not have the responsibilities that will come upon you as life goes by. You have more luxuries, more opportunities than you will probably ever have in your life. So what are you doing with it? Are you laying up for the winter? What are you storing up? What are you building? So don't let the ant be smarter than you. Make sure that you're taking advantage of these things and laying up for the future. It could be school. Once responsibilities come, you're making car payments. You're having to provide for a family. You're going to have a really hard time going back to school. So that's just an example. There's lots of things you can be doing now. How about like Bible study? It's really hard just to study the Bible on your own if there's other people that are standing on top of you saying, hey, I need you to teach this class. Can you answer this question? How do you resolve this problem? At that point, you're studying for other people. You're not able just to study what you want to study. So you have in lots of different ways, opportunities now that you'll never have time again. All right. So what is a sluggard? He said, go to the ant, you sluggard. What is a sluggard? I mean, the word pictures it, right? We've all seen slugs. How do they move across the ground? It's like, so painfully slow. I mean, they're just gross. They're just disgusting. And this is the picture of a person. A picture of someone who has a task, they have a responsibility, they're getting from point A to point B, and they're like, and they can't make it. Every little thing is like the biggest struggle, the biggest burden, and everything's terrible. So how does somebody become a sluggard? If we know what it is, how does somebody turn into that? All right. So let's look at the text here. In verses 9 through 11 of chapter 6, he says, how long will you slumber, O sluggard? When will you rise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands. So the idea is like somebody's like laying back in their chair. That's the idea of the folding of the hands. They're taking a little nap. All right. So shall your poverty come on you like a prowler and your need like an armed man. So imagine the person who's laying back taking a nap and there's robbers on top of him. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, no warning, okay? This is what's going to happen to the sluggard. Now, not literally, that's going to be robbers and prowlers, but he's talking about something else. So, what happens? The sluggard is the lazy, slothful person who's not going to work as needed. But what happens? This is not something that they wanted to happen. It's not something they planned on happening. They said, just a little sleep. Just a short nap. And then I'll get up and get busy. 5 more minutes. Then I'll get busy. Is it just 5 minutes? What happens most of the time? Most of you have had alarms and have probably set the alarm, probably hit the snooze button. How many times do you end up hitting the snooze button? Do you really only hit it just once? We've all been there. We end up like hitting it over, and next thing we know, we're panic stricken, all right? That's just a small example. You know that feeling, but magnify it to your entire life. Whether it's preparing, again, back to school, a trade, whatever the case may be. Are you preparing? I'm just going to just rest for a little bit. One more level, one more match, a few more minutes on Facebook, Twitter, whatever. There's lots of different ways to do this. But the big lie is that we tell ourselves just a little, and a little turns into a lot. So what happens is life is never clean. It's messy. We think, I'm going to prepare for this thing, and we wait till the last minute. You ever heard the expression, when it rains, it pours? And then something else comes crashing in, and you can't deal with it because you waited to the last minute, and you've got no room for error. And we live in a world that's full of error. What was the curse? You'll work by the sweat of your brow, thorns and briars and thistles, the earth will yield. Things are not easy. Things pop up in our way that are unplanned, unexpected. Things break, things wear out, and all of a sudden, we're in trouble. And it is like the prowler, the robber is on top of us because we're not in a position to do something. And so ultimately, that creates temptation, and it also takes us out of play where we can't help other people. So we'll talk about this a little bit more as we go. Ecclesiastes 7:12 talks about money being a defense. And Ephesians 4:28 tells us to work and labor so that we can give to those that have need. If we're lazy, if we're sluggard, we're not going to be able to do that. All right. Before we talk about the next class of danger to avoid some abominable people. Is there any questions about that? About the ant, the sluggard, and work ethic? All right, so that's just a preview. We're going to spend more time, and we're going to have a whole section because there's a lot of Proverbs that deal with this. So we'll come back to it. All right, the next person that we're going to talk about is a worthless person, a wicked man. What are his characteristics? What does he look like? How do we identify him? Again, he's not going to wear the, hello, my name is worthless man, wicked man. He's not going to be wearing a tag that tells you who he is. You got to look at his traits and his characteristics. What is it that he does?
He has a perverse mouth, winks with his eyes, shuffles with his feet, it says. He points with his fingers, and perversity is in his heart. You can't see into their heart, but you can see them, the things that they do, the character that's described here in verses 12 and 13. And that's how you know what's in their heart.
Okay. All right. Good, Isaac. So the most obvious thing is what they say, the twisted things, the perverse things that they say. He winks with his eyes, he shuffles his feet, he points with his fingers, perversity is in his heart. He devises evil continually, he sows discord, therefore his calamity shall come suddenly, suddenly he shall be broken without remedy. All right, so that's pretty strong language, worthless. I mean, we are created in the image of God, are we not? And we've already looked at Proverbs where it says, if you don't give to the poor, you're reproaching their maker. All right, so here's God saying somebody is worthless. They are without value. That's strong language. So that tells you that there is no good that this person can accomplish. They have no good purpose. They have no good abilities. Everything they have is wholly devoted to being wicked. All right, so they are perverse. They say one thing, but their heart, as Isaac said, has something completely different inside. So they're entirely dishonest and without integrity, and they're determined. What are they doing continually? They're planning evil. All right, so this is not something they're devising evil. This is not something they're going to give up on. And then also, they're divisive. There are people that as soon as they come into a group, the first thing they start thinking, whether it's conscious or not, is how can I disrupt things so that I can be in control? All right, that's this kind of person. Their objective is to, they don't care what it does to other people, but they want to put themselves in a position of influence and control, and they'll cast down and divide however necessary so they can reassemble the parts in a way that pleases them and they can use. But just like the other person that we talked about, the lazy person, their destruction is going to come suddenly without warning, and it'll be completely. There won't be anything left of them. So what is the point of this? The point is notice these characteristics and stay clear of this person. Wisdom tells you what this person looks like. If you weren't listening to wisdom, you're not going to recognize them. You're going to think they're your friend. You're going to think they're the most popular person. But in reality, they're somebody completely different. So wisdom helps you and protects you from this person. All right, what do you think is the point about him winking, shuffling, pointing? Does that mean if you wink or you shuffle your feet or you point that you're this person, you're this wicked person? What's the point?
He's describing a cultural look at somebody. Things we could think of today would be tattoos, piercings, certain kinds of clothing that do not denote a person who is striving for wisdom.
Okay, all right. Are those big warning signs? I mean, think about even like a tattoo. I can't hide it. Well, I mean, I guess I could, depending on where it is. But the winking and the shuffling, how obvious are those things?
Not very. His divisiveness may be very subtle.
All right. And if somebody comes to you and says, this is a bad person, how do you know they're bad? Well, they wink. What is your reaction going to be? Come on, Mom. Come on, Dad. I mean, who cares? I mean, they're pointing, they're winking, they're shuffling. Is it really that big of a deal? So the lesson here is there are things that indicate somebody is a very perverse person. They're very subtle. All right. They're not going to be, again, not the big hello, I am glad to meet you, glad to destroy you. They're not going to be wearing that kind of tag. All right. This is going to be a very subtle thing that they're going to communicate in these small ways. So here's the lesson. If you haven't been around long enough to learn these little things and these subtle things, you need to listen to the people that have. These small signals are there. And people that have been around for a while, your parents, see these things and they know these things. And when they tell you, look, I see this, I know what this means, don't give them the eye roll. They see something that you don't see. Listen to them. Again, remember, what do we say? What were the key attributes of wisdom? Things that are required? Humility, faith, trust. This is where these things kick in, is in these very specific instances. So learn to trust and listen to those who've gone before you, who are responsible for you and care for you. All right. Let's talk about the six things or seven things that God hates that are an abomination. What do they have in common? Why would they be so bad? What elevates these above all other sins? These six things the Lord hates, yes, seven are an abomination to him. A proud look, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that are swift in running to evil, a false witness who speaks lies, and one who sows discord among brethren. All right, so this is kind of a poetic figure of the whole body. So this may be part of the imagery here. Like, you know, all parts of them are corrupt. But notice specifically, what did we talk about being one of the biggest enemies to wisdom? It's pride. Not listening, not being humble. I know, I don't need your help. I don't need your advice. I got things figured out. Thank you very much. All right, so pride is one of the most destructive things. It probably is the most destructive thing that we can let creep into our life. So that would be some reason to hate it, because it's so destructive. All of these other sins are going to be things that are not only destructive to us, but they actually are destructive to other people. All right, and they represent kind of a terminal worst case condition, if you will. All right. I think there's a big wake-up call in there. God hates all these things. Shedding innocent blood. That's really on par with a proud look and a lying tongue. I mean, you would put those things in the same category? That should be a wake-up call. In God's eyes, from what God sees, the one who's looking at the end of things, he's telling you pride and lying is on par with murdering. All right, they're that level as far as being destructive. Just may not see it yet. All right, so keep your eyes open and stay away from them. All right, now we're going to return to the immoral woman, and obviously we won't finish this today. So we'll pick up with this Wednesday night. So make sure you get a mark down for this. He says, "My son, keep your father's command and do not forsake the law of your mother. Bind them continually upon your heart. Tie them around your neck. When you roam, they will lead you. When you sleep, they will keep you. When you awake, they will speak with you." All right, we've seen this kind of instruction before, but this is a little bit different, a little more imagery here. How does your father's command and the law of your mother lead you, keep you, and speak with you? Well, we will have to pick up with this question next time. So make sure that you're doing your lessons, you're preparing, and you're thinking about these things. It will help you get the most out of class if you come prepared. If you're seeing this for the first time as we go through it, you won't be able to get nearly as much out of it. So do the best that you can to prepare, and always feel free to text me, email me, call me, and I'll be glad to help you with any of these questions also. So you have that as a resource. Thank you all. I'll see you next time.